Peter B. Collins with your news and comment for Monday, December 19th. By the way, no news and comment tomorrow. I won't be around. Probably have one for you Wednesday, if everything works out okay. So today, after months of preparation and delays, I had my own encounter with Jack Abramoff, the super lobbyist who went to jail after funneling millions of dollars into Republicans Tom DeLay, George Bush, and many others.
Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around.
And Jack Abramoff entertained my questions, responded fairly well. He was spinning on quite a regular basis and had bouts of amnesia or just thought people had gotten the story wrong in certain cases. And then, with about 10 minutes to go in the interview, I introduced him to Tom Rogers. Tom is a member of the Blackfoot Nation, and he was one of the Native Americans who, starting in 2003, exposed the double dealing Jack Abramoff had engaged in with various Indian tribes, some of which he represented and others he just extorted or manipulated. And as you're about to hear, when I introduced Tom Rogers to Jack Abramoff, Abramoff listened to Rogers' question for a while and then, without comment, hung up the line and ended his part of the interview. Why don't you listen? Jack Abramoff with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And Jack, I've invited Tom Rogers to talk with us for a couple of minutes. He is a Blackfeet tribal member from Montana, and he was centrally involved in the efforts to expose your double dealing with Indian tribes. Tom, welcome to the program today.
Good afternoon, Peter.
And what would you like to say or ask Jack Abramoff, Tom?
Well, I think a couple of things I would like to ask Jack. I think one thing, and I think Jack was interviewed the other night on the Colbert Report, and he was asked what was his most disappointing, disgusting, or despicable act that he had engaged in. And I think I'm stating this correctly, that Jack said in trying to insert the language of opening up a casino in Texas in an election reform bill. But I think I would point to another one that was even more heartrending and dark, is that was referenced in a Lawrence O'Donnell interview, which was the fact that, as you know, in our community, in the tribal community, our elders are held in incredible regard. They're not like, you know, corporate executive officers or even how we would treat some of our own elders in white society.
Tom?
If you'd like to make a call,
yes.
Tom? Hang up and try again.
Yep.
Jack Abramoff hung up on us.
Hang up and then dial your operator.
That's the sound you're hearing. And at first I thought it was just a noise on the line. I did hear the click.
Jack hung up?
Yes, he did.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again.
Wow.
So, wow. I guess what we're learning here, Tom, is that there are limits to his ability to forgive and limits to his ability to confront his own wrongdoing, because you were very polite in the way you were addressing him. I didn't find you to be rude or difficult in any way, and he seemed to be willing to talk to me about many issues, but I guess talking with you ear to ear was just too much for him.
Well, I was going to ask him, Peter, that him and Michael, they said it, you know, that they did not really care about the Tiguas towards a certain point of their representation. But what they did was they went to the tribal council and they asked the council if they could take out life insurance policies on their elders so that they could offset their invoices, which the Tiguas could no longer pay, which were in excess of $5 million. The Tiguas could no longer pay them, so they said, well, I'll take an insurance policy out on your parents and your grandparents, and I'll apply those death benefit proceeds to my invoice.
That shows a lot of respect. You can hear the entire interview with Jack Abramoff in Podcast 337 at peterbcollins.com, and it is free. I'll be announcing later this week or next week some changes in the website. This daily commentary will continue to be available free at absolutely no charge on an ongoing basis. But we will start to charge either a dollar or a monthly subscription fee of $5 or more for access to our in-depth interviews. And I hope you'll be able to support that. And if you're not financially able, stay tuned. We'll tell you some ways that we can help out with that. Well, really, the big news here on Monday is people who have died over the last few days. And to serenade us, a great singer from Cape Verde, Cesaria Evora. If you've never heard her sing, listen right now.
Tinha coração, nitinha linha benção, olhos claros tão visão, esperança e risada. Nininha tinha coração, nitinha linha benção.
Known as the Barefoot Diva, Cesaria Evora always performed without shoes. She died at age 70 on her native island of São Vicente in Cape Verde. Also passing away over the last few days, Christopher Hitchens, the British-born writer who was a very incisive commentator on American politics and much more. He was a man of letters and a very bright intellectual. I had only one encounter over the years with Chris Hitchens, and he was drunk. And as a result of that, I never really sought out to talk with him again. And then when he joined forces with the Bush administration and others in arguing that 9/11 was the appropriate trigger for an invasion of Iraq and war on Muslims, well, that's when I checked out on Chris Hitchens. But then I checked back in because he wrote a powerful book about his atheism. And I credit him with launching a lot of conversations and provoking people to think about religion and its role in contemporary society. Also passing away over the weekend on Sunday, Kim Jong-il, the short guy with the big hair who ruled North Korea with an iron fist. And ruthless really doesn't do him justice. As he and his cronies sipped scotch in palaces, people died of malnutrition. And he was just one of the cruelest people to run a nation on this planet. And the only concern about his passing is what will take his place. He's trying to hand off to his son, who isn't even 30 years of age, and the Taipodong missiles that they have, and their limited development of nuclear capabilities. I think that they may have some sort of a makeshift weapon, but they don't have a delivery system. Those Taipodong missiles do not really achieve their goals. And so he was more or less a paper tiger. But because of the tensions at the 38th parallel that have continued since the 1950s and the putative end of the Korean War, he has done a lot of damage there. And we'll see if the family is able to maintain rule, or if there is a military coup, or some unknown other figure who may arise and take power in North Korea. Also passing away, Václav Havel, the Czech writer and dissident, who really was responsible in many respects for the fall of the Soviet Union and the liberation of the Eastern Bloc. And he, of course, freed the Czech Republic, and Slovakia, which formerly had been linked to the Czech Republic in an unhappy union for many years. And Havel served 14 years as president and continued as a writer and a social commentator, a public thinker. And I visited the Czech Republic once. I went there with a group of journalists in 1994. And so this was several years after the communists had fallen. And it was fascinating to see and just to feel the sense of freedom in the air. And I met many people who were starting their own businesses and really enjoying and exercising the kind of liberation that you and I can really only imagine. And so Havel, I think, will go down as one of the great liberators of the 20th century. Also, here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we lost an interesting man named Warren Hellman. Warren Hellman was a solid one percenter. He ran Lehman Brothers and then set up his own investment banking firm. But unlike, say, Mitt Romney, he wasn't the kind of guy who took over a company so he could break it up, lay off workers, and dispose of the parts for more than he had paid for it. He was the kind of guy who only bought companies that he thought he could improve. And here in the Bay Area, he did a lot of civic work, including one of the things we're all fond of him, regardless of his status or his politics. Warren Hellman, about 10 years ago, started the Mostly Strictly Bluegrass Festival, which is now an annual event in the fall, early October, in Golden Gate Park. And it attracts almost 300,000 people over 2 or 3 days, a rich mix of American roots music and a lot of great performers, some of whom step out of their pop or commercial roles to engage in bluegrass music or other types of American folk music. And so we'll be warm and fuzzy about Warren Hellman for years about that. He also participated in civic projects like trying to cut pensions for San Francisco city workers. And, of course, that's a mixed bag because in some ways we need to approach pension reform, but I hate to do it on the backs of people who worked hard for the benefits that they deserve. And, of course, we have to keep in mind that most people who get pensions get a couple of $1,000s a month, not the rich rewards of a six-figure pension that accrue to corporate executives and too many of our political leaders. Recently here on our podcast, I've been talking a lot about the National Defense Authorization Act, and it has passed. At this point, I honestly don't know if the president has signed it. But the controversies remain, and let me begin with Senators Bernie Sanders and Al Franken. Sanders has published a piece deploring not only the cost of this defense bill and the continuation of the war in Afghanistan, but he wrote, "This bill also contains misguided provisions that, in the name of fighting terrorism, essentially authorize the indefinite imprisonment of American citizens without charges. While we must aggressively pursue international terrorists and all of those who would do us harm, we must do it in a way that protects the Constitution and the civil liberties which make us proud to be Americans." Al Franken published a commentary on Saturday at the Huffington Post, and there was no humor in Franken's article, given that he was a very funny guy on Saturday Night Live. No, he said that he voted against the NDAA because it denigrates the Constitution. It denigrates the rights of American citizens. And Al Franken has it 100% correct. Now, the group Anonymous, which I have learned grew out of Scientologists who were unhappy with the leadership of David Miscavige. Anonymous, of course, rallied to the support of WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning, and Julian Assange. And now, Anonymous, if it is the same Anonymous, and since they're anonymous, I don't really know, but I think so, they have done a document dump, and they not only have named the 86 senators who voted for the NDAA, this controversial defense funding bill, but they have released a lot of information on those senators who voted. And I just have one example in front of me. Rob Portman is a Republican senator from the state of Ohio. He made himself a target as an advocate of the NDAA, but were truly disturbed by the ludicrous $272,000 he received from special interest groups supporting the NDAA bill that authorizes the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. Robert J. Portman, we plan to make an example of you. Well, I like this. I think while I would not, I would prefer to see Anonymous sign on to the work that they're doing here and have a little transparency on their side of the ledger, I think that this is an excellent way to respond to an unconstitutional act by members of the Senate and House who have sworn to uphold and defend our Constitution. Perhaps the best recent essay about the NDAA comes, no surprise, from Glenn Greenwald at Salon.com. And he airs out three big myths about the NDAA. And I acknowledge that there was a lot of confusion over the debate and the efforts to fix this from a civil liberties point of view. And the final version of the bill, we were told, protects American citizens and doesn't allow them to be subjected to indefinite detention without charge or trial. But let's go through Greenwald's 3 points briefly. Number one, this bill does not codify indefinite detention. That's the argument of people who support it. And Greenwald very carefully refutes that by printing the section, let's see, this is subsection B and subsection C of section 1021 of the NDAA. And it reads, the disposition of a person under the law of war as described in subsection A may include the following. Detention under the law of war without trial until the end of the hostilities authorized by the authorization for military force. And Greenwald writes, it simply cannot be any clearer within the confines of the English language that this bill codifies the power of an indefinite detention. It expressly empowers the president with regard to anyone accused of the acts to detain them without trial until the end of the hostilities. So do not be fooled by those who try to spin this. This bill is very deadly and unconstitutional. Myth number two, that the bill doesn't expand the scope of the war on terror. This myth is very easily dispensed with, says Greenwald. The scope of the war as defined in 2001 was quite specific and narrow compared to this bill. Here's the full extent in the original bill, and then he offers the clearer language. So he says that the new addition in Section 2 allows the president to target not only those who helped perpetrate the 9/11 attacks or those who harbored them, but also anyone who substantially supports such groups and or associated forces. And this is so vague that anybody who sent an email saying, well, maybe Al-Qaeda is not all bad, could be considered associated forces. And number three, the myth that U.S. citizens are exempted from this bill. He said this is simply false. The bill is purposely muddled on this issue, which is what is enabling the falsehood. There are two separate indefinite military detention provisions in the bill, and they do, in sum, permit American citizens to be detained in this way. And he cites, section B1. The requirement to detain a person in military custody under this section does not extend to citizens of the United States, but that's a requirement of military detention. It doesn't mean that it is not possible, optional, or an available choice to the commander-in-chief. So I remain gravely concerned about these issues, and I do applaud, once again, with some surprise, the work of my Senator Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Intelligence Committee, who last week introduced a new bill called the Due Process Guarantee Act of 2011. And it's pretty simple. It amends the Non-Detention Act of 1971, and it explicitly says that an authorization for the use of military force does not authorize the indefinite detention without charge or trial of U.S. citizens who are apprehended domestically. Well, I hope that many others will sign on. Senator Feinstein has bipartisan co-signers on this bill, and we need this, and we also need them to fix the mess in the NDAA, because we can't rely on the Roberts Supreme Court to do the right thing and protect our rights. Thanks for listening to today's News and Comment. Again, check out the podcast with Jack Abramoff at peterbcollins.com, and share my work with your friends. Put it up on Facebook, and if it's not too much trouble, like it, will you? Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until